Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to Racing Lives. My name's Aurélie, Aurélie Danselot, and in this podcast, I use motorsport as an excuse to chat to some of the most inspiring women I know. Each week brings a different guest, and we discuss everything from career beginnings to what it's truly like to be involved in one of the fastest sports in the world. My guest today is a hugely experienced PR and events expert. Try and say that twice in a row. With over 20 years in the sports and entertainment industries, she's a director at Revolution Communications, where, and I love this description, I am absolutely stealing it from her site, her and her team have carved a niche infusing the worlds of motorsport and automotive with lifestyle and entertainment. Her client list reads like the who's who of automotive and motorsport royalty, from the Grand Tour to classic car shows, Formula E, Formula One, and so many more. She also has her hand firmly on the glitter pulse with connections to England's best known TV shows, including one of my personal favourites, Strictly Come Dancing. Before that, she built her extensive experience in PR and events, working with racing drivers, F1 teams, rally teams, huge brands such as Vodafone, Hilton, Quicksilver, to name but a few, and even a football team. She's also a prolific features writer, published in more magazines than I can list now, and she is the embodiment behind one of my favourite mottos, keep calm and drink tea. My guest today is the powerhouse that is Rebecca Banks.
Well, I'm very embarrassed, and also, who was that description about? It's very so nice of you. It is crazy, like when you kind of read back over, I forget some of the clients that I've even worked for, and then you'll have a look back at the list and you go, oh, yeah, I did that. Wow, I forgot I did that. That was quite cool. Yeah, it's been a busy 20 years.
You've not wasted the time, have you?
Try not to. We're in here once, aren't we, that we know of. So, yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let me ask you the questions then. Tell me, when and where did your racing life actually begin?
This is probably different to lots of people in that I didn't know anything about racing before I started working in it. I think with sports, you kind of watch and know what you maybe grow up around. So if your parents are big rugby fans or cricket fans or whatever that is, that and it's on in your house, that I think for most people, that's kind of ends up being what you also are drawn to. And we never, ever had motorsport on in my house when I was growing up. It was a big football house. And it was the same with, you know, if I would go to my aunt and uncle's houses, it was the same thing. It was always football. So I knew a lot about football growing up and nothing else. So motorsport, I knew nothing. I could probably have named Michael Schumacher if I was sort of had a gun to my head when I was 17, but that was it. And then I went to this college to study PR and media. And during our course, we had to do two work placements. And the first work placement I did was at IMG, which is the big sports management company. And then I had another placement I needed to fill towards the end of my course. And I was also sort of looking for a job. So I went to my college, who had a really good careers office and said that I really was interested in sports marketing and PR, and particularly in football, and was there anything they could do for me? And they didn't have any connections in football, but they said that they'd got this this job in for a PA for a motorsport company, which happened to be in the same town that I grew up. And they said, but you can't be nervous when we tell you who the interview's for. I still, tell me. And they still, it's for the chairman. His name's David Richards. I just had like a blank face. I had no clue whatsoever. I was like, okay, fine. So they sent my CV to them and they said, look, we're looking for a permanent role, but we're looking for someone that's like a second jobber and she has no experience. So maybe she's not for us. And I said, okay, look, I've got this placement I need to do. Offer me to go and do the placement for 2 weeks and then see what happens. So they said yes. I went and worked for David Richards at ProDrive for 2 week placement when I was 17, and he offered me a full-time job at the end of the placement. So that's kind of how I started. So I started working for ProDrive full-time when it was 2 weeks before I turned 18. And yeah, I worked for him for a year. And then he's such an amazing guy to learn from. And the amazing thing about that role was it gave an overview of the whole ProDrive business. So at the time, they had the Subaru World Rally team. They had the Ford Mondeo touring car team. They did customer rally programs. And they obviously had the whole engineering side of it. So, and they also used to rent a room to Arden Formula 3000 team, which was run by Christian Horner at the time. So I had this amazing overview of all these different businesses, which then gave me the opportunity to kind of decide which bits kind of tickled my fancy a bit more, really. And so I worked for David for a year, and then a role came up as the PR and marketing assistant for the Subaru World Rally team part of the business. And he was just like, go for it, because I was working as his PA, but I wanted to work in PR. So it was a foot in the door, but like an amazing foot in the door. I couldn't have wished for a better sort of introduction to racing.
That's amazing.
Sorry, that just ended up being a really long story.
No, but it's amazing. It was literally like, but do you know what? Regardless whether it's for this or not, everyone that I speak to has a different way into motorsport. I've not met anybody that's copy and paste.
Yeah. It's really interesting, isn't it? And sometimes I feel really, really bad when, someone really wants a job because they're so passionate about motorsport. And then I knew nothing. And it was that sliding doors moment, because I could have gone and taken a full-time job at IMG, which they offered me, but I was 17. I was like, I don't know if I'm ready to go live in the big smoke, and maybe I want to stay a bit close to home. So it was sliding doors, and I took this kind of motorsport route, and I'm obviously still here.
It worked okay. You're not hating it.
No, I'm not hating it.
Would you consider yourself a fan of motorsport? Did you become a fan of motorsport through working through it? Clearly you didn't grow up with it.
It's a funny one. Like, I don't watch racing in my spare time if I'm not required to for work. I don't know, that probably makes me sound really bad.
No, I'm the same.
I'll watch the occasional Formula One. I don't really do much work directly in Formula One at the moment. I do maybe like one or two races a year with different projects, but I might watch Silverstone and Monaco and maybe one other if it happens to be on and I happen to be home, but I don't tune in every week. I do get very passionate about the clients that I have and the projects that I'm working on. And I get very, very into, there's nothing, as there's nothing like experiencing kind of success. And on the flip side, the bad times, it's part of working as a team, is kind of going through all those highs and lows together. And that being part of a team is a huge thing. And that's obviously, that has an emotional side to it. And you'd have to be pretty cold-hearted not to let it affect you in that way. But yeah, it very much depends. Like, one of my very long-standing clients, as is Nelson Piquet Jr., who I've worked with this year for 16 years. And I'm very, very passionate about his racing and what he's doing and his successes. And, probably the most emotional day I've had in my whole career was the day that he won the Formula E championship. And I'm someone, I'm not, like I said, you enjoy the successes and you have emotions no matter how your clients are performing it, But at the end of it, I'm doing a job. So I can't sit and cry because I'm sad or celebrate for an hour when there's work to be done. You know, you take that moment, but there's still all work to be done when you're working on a race. So I don't tend to be an overly emotional person when I'm working. But that day, I mean, I was crying for about 3 hours. I couldn't stop. It was
But it's also the release, isn't it? Because you've been with him whilst he's working towards it. You've worked towards it as well in, you know, in your contribution. Yeah. And then it's achieving something that he's wanted, that you've wanted for him for a really long time.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And you know, when you know the story of something and the path someone's taken, it obviously just adds a whole other layer to it.
Yeah. Also sheer tiredness, because by the end of the championship.
Yeah. I tell you what, those Formula E double headers are not easy. You get to the end of the first day and you lay on your bed and you think, I can't do that again. And then there's a whole other day to do. And that weekend was a doubleheader.
Oh, blimey. Do you have an earliest memory of motorsport?
I don't remember the first rally I did with the Subaru World Rally Team, actually. It's a bit bizarre. Those times are a bit hazy. I remember some really nice moments. One of the drivers I worked with was Richard Burns, and I was there when he won the championship, and I got on very well with him, and I was super young, but I had a good relationship with him and Robert, and I'm still friends with Robert Reed today. You know, they're amazing guys, and you know, so I remember spending time with them. I remember being at some rallies with them when they won, and it's all really, really amazing. But yeah, no like specific point.
Would you say, did it choose you or did you choose it?
It's funny. So I ended up being at ProDrive for 4 years. And I would say the last year that I was there, I was actively looking for other jobs because I wanted to take that next step up. I felt like I was ready and it wasn't available to me there. But I very, very much was not looking for another motorsport job. I thought, I've done that. I've got some really good experience. I've got experience working with international media, international event programs. But I just thought I need to, I don't want to be niche. I want to go and work in some other industries. And I couldn't get an interview. I was interviewing for like entertainment PR agencies, more consumer PR agencies. And already after 3 years, they were telling me I was niche in motorsport. It was interesting. And then what happened was, as I was sort of coming to 4 years, that was when David Richards and the kind of management team at ProDrive were given the role of managing the Lucky Strike BAR Honda Formula One team. And they were looking for a press officer role. And I asked if they would mind if I applied for it. And they said, absolutely, go for it. So I applied, got the job, went over and worked in Formula One in-house for another year. But I still was looking for just some diversity. I just didn't want to be in this little box. And that's when I went off and did some football. And then, you know, over the years, I've done lots of other things, but I always end up keep coming back to it. And I don't know if that's because A, I'm meant to be here, maybe I am, or B, it ends up that I've been doing it for so long. That's where my, you know, it's where so many of my contacts are, you know, I know how to do this. I know this industry. I know the work, and I love it. You know, I'm not sort of desperately trying to get out of it, but I do like what I have now, a bit of a balance where I'm doing motorsport, but I am also doing some other things.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, and also you're trusted, which in any industry, I think is, it goes a long way. So you may be trying to diversify and get into other projects because it's fun and we keep pulling you back.
I can't get out.
Just come back, one more show, it'll be all right.
So no, I think I'm probably my fate lies here now, I think.
Oh, and also if it can, you know, if it can keep things interesting and actually, you know, you get enough time on the side to do other projects, or you can actually one of the things that you do amazingly, which we're always thankful for, is taking motorsport and putting it in another industry, because yeah, you know, that's actually interesting.
Yeah, and I think that's what has kept, it's what I love about what I do, is that I can do that. It was about 8 years ago. So I went off freelance for years, just working on my own after I finished at the football club. I then went freelance, super young, didn't really know what I was doing. And then 8 years ago, I met my business partner, Emma, who you know, and we decided to set up a business together so we could do some bigger projects. And she was doing at the time PR for racing drivers and teams, and I was doing similar things, but also working on some brands, but brands that were pretty much involved in racing. And one of the first clients that we got was the company that ran Top Gear Live. And that was amazing because they wanted us to basically bring motorsport to them because that was where our contacts were. So we would book major motorsport talent for Top Gear Live and Top Gear festivals. And that was brilliant because it was fusing those two worlds. I think for me, it's just about constantly, I don't know, I don't like to just be bought, you know, I can't just do the same thing year after year after year after year. I have to have some challenges. And actually, I'm doing a lot, as you know, in Formula E right now. I've been working in Formula E since it started. So it's into the sixth year now. And that's so fascinating because it's just a whole other thing again. And that's a constant challenge because from the first season, when it was pretty much like walking into a sort of F3 paddock, you're now walking into something that, yes, it doesn't look as slick as F1 because we're in temporary tenting because we're setting up in the middle of cities. But the type of work we're doing and how busy we are is on a level with F1. And it's just kind of, you know, it's that time. It's that time when automotive companies are looking at electrification. And then it's just being in that place is quite interesting.
I bet it's thrilling. I bet the conversation that you're able to have as well with people who, for so many reasons, might not consider Formula One and are attracted to Formula E, or at least haven't discounted it. I can imagine that it's a thrilling time to be in Formula E.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you know, next season it's a world championship. It's gone to that level already that will be year 7 and it's a world championship.
Yeah, that's amazing. What would you say is the biggest misconception about your job?
Oh, it's that famous line from Bridget Jones, isn't it? The girl that just sits there fanning about the press releases. That's the one, isn't it? It's
definitely.
So much bigger than that. You know about PR and comms and you know, our role has changed. It's just unrecognizable from when I started. When I started doing PR, it sounds so ridiculous that it doesn't feel like it was that long ago, but we were still faxing press releases. You know, social media did not exist. The thought of making a video, just like, I don't know, a video was like a big thing. Like that took planning and it wasn't just a thing that happened all the time. And just 20 years later, and you have a direct relationship now with fans. You have, you have a whole social media and content side of comms. And, you know, we're not only talking to media, we're talking to every single one of our audiences directly now. And with that just brings a whole new load of responsibilities and also challenges. And it's quite nice, you know, to be creative. It's definitely a different job, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't think I carried a mobile phone when I first started. I think I might have had my own mobile phone, but it definitely just played Snake.
Yes,
and was good for text messages.
Snake and tech, but text used to take about 3 minutes to compose, so you'd send them sparingly, wouldn't you?
Yeah. And I remember one of the first times I had to live tweet a race, and I was doing it from a BlackBerry phone. And actually, I had to have 3 spare batteries in my pocket just to be able to tweet the race, which is now you throw it out the window. If that
well, happens. I was BlackBerry for years. Like I was like, no. Adrian Atkinson, who he works for the Jaguar Formula E team. He was my boss at ProDrive, actually, for the Subaru World Rally team. So he was a bit of an early mentor, and he's always really good at technology. And he had an iPhone. He's like, Bex, you need to get an iPhone. I said, I can't work it. I can't even turn your screen on. I can't do it.
Yeah, I need a keyboard.
It probably took 2 years for me to get an iPhone. And like, I can't even, why did I wait so long?
we were learning. One of the things that's very common throughout the whole of motorsport is the emphasis on success. And I actually find that it's highly competitive in all areas of motorsport, regardless of whether you're driving the car or putting the car together. If you only are near it, you end up being competitive and almost looking left, right, center in terms of where you are, you know, how you're performing. How have you experienced that in your field?
I'm kind of, and Emma's the same, my business partner, that's why we kind of work very well together, is in that we kind of judge success on more on ourselves. We don't like compare ourselves to what other people are doing because we're in our lane, other people are in different lanes, they've got different, you know, resources, whatever. So, but we're quite hard on ourselves. So we set quite hard targets for ourselves and we kind of judge, but yes, the industry as a whole is like that. I think it does drive you to try and be the best you can, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I know what resources I have and how they compare to other teams. And that doesn't define what I do in the slightest. It helps to explain what you may or may not be able to do. But I put the pressure on myself to be more innovative and more creative, because that's my brain and I don't need any other resources for that. And it's learning and developing. And
I have worked with countless clients over the years who have little to no money for activation. And that's when you can be the most creative, because you've got to be creative, because you've got to think of ways that you can meet a brief with not much. And then you can do some really cool work out of it.
Yeah, exactly. 9 out of 10 times that's the stuff you end up being proudest of as well. Yeah. So what was the moment when you realized that motorsport isn't actually glamorous at all?
Oh, this is an easy one. This is so easy. This goes back to my rally days. So there's two incidents. The first one was one of my first rallies when I was 18, and we got to the hotel, you know, after a day at the, you know, back in those days, I don't know, who knows about rallying, but they used to move the service park around 2 or 3 times a day. So you'd get up, you'd everyone would drive the big haulers, and we'd all kind of follow on, and you'd set the service park up, and then the cars would come in, they'd have their service, and we'd have to pack everything up, drive 2-3 hours to set up again. Now I think it's all single service parks, or at least single service park a day. And I remember we got back to the hotel at something like, I don't know, 11:30 one night, and they said, okay, so we'll see you at 2. I was like, 2? Think the what? The afternoon? That can't be right. No, we'll see you at 2 a.m. to leave. So I'd have, you know, it was like something like a 2-hour sleep before the next day was upon us. And then another one was Rally GB. And yeah, we were up at 5 a.m. or something setting up, and we were outside setting up the service park area. And then it just rained like it only can do in England. And I was drenched from head to foot by 6 a.m. And we still had, you know, like a 14-hour day ahead of us or something. It's not, you know, it's not glamorous.
No, it's not. And also there's no excuses. It's like, if you don't have a spare set of clothing in your bag, which you may or may not, that depends, you know, how you're planning or what you knew was happening that day, you carry on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
let's talk about balance, because I find that the work that we do is thrilling, but it is all encompassing. And if you're on, you're on. Mm. Like you say, you get 2 hours sleep, hopefully a bit more, but when you're on the job, you're on the job. So how do you find that you're balancing your work and then the rest of your life? And then also, how do you manage the expectation from your friends and family? Because it's also a tough one to explain, I find personally.
You're absolutely right. It's kind of all encompassing industry. I think that's probably also, though, why on the positive side of it, it's not just a job, is it? It's a life. And you know, there's so many of us that have amazing relationships and so many friends in the industry, because it ends up being, it's not a 9-to-5, it's a lifestyle. And when you're traveling the world half of the year with those people, it becomes a family. And combined with that, I'm running my own business. So then that's always on your mind. You know, I chose to do this, but it's not like there's nobody that's going to take work off me or so I can have a few hours not thinking about it. You know, it's what I'm doing. So, yeah, I'm thinking about work a lot, probably too much, but it's kind of what I choose to do and I love it. So that's it. I feel like I have the balance of travel actually okay at the moment, because like I said earlier, I don't do too many Formula One races. Like, I don't know how comfortable I would be doing a whole Formula One season, the amount of races you guys have now and the amount of long hauls you have. Formula E is actually quite a nice calendar, so I do all of those races and then events that I'm doing for other clients, and it feels like a manageable amount. So in terms of travel, I actually feel like it's quite good at the moment. I feel like I see enough of my family. I feel like I see enough of my friends. There are obviously periods of time when you've got some crazy projects going on, or it's particularly busy, or you've got a couple of back-to-back events, and then you're tired and you haven't got those things. But there's always kind of a in 3 weeks you've got a couple of weeks at home or something. So yeah, balance. I kind of feel like I'm okay. There's definitely been periods when I haven't, and then you kind of need to just pause and stop and go, okay, yes, this is my business. Yes, this is very important to me. But I think probably lots of people we know have probably been quite close to burnout, and you have to keep an eye on yourself at that point and try and do something to bring it back a little bit.
What's your check-in moment like that? How do you catch it? How do you recognize it? And then how do you relax, or how do you let go?
I always know when it's probably going to come, because I look at my diary and I go, oh, wow, I've got 5 or 6 weeks worth of events here. That's going to be really tough. And I've only got that day that I can go and see my family. I know it's going to be tough, but I can see there's an end point. And then when it's in the diary, it always looks doable. And then when you're in the middle of it, you go, oh, wow, okay. We're here. You just have a bloody good cry and then, you know, carry on, and then it ends. You get to the end of it and have a glass of wine with your friends. And then you kind of forget about it. Yeah. It's never got so bad for me that I've needed counselling or anything.
I'm like, get through it. Promise yourself a nice meal at the end of it.
How do you identify when you're close to that?
I become too negative. Yeah. And I do my own head in. I literally annoy myself with feeling the need to complain. And I realize it's just because I need to let it out. But then it's like, go find the right person to speak to. More often than not, my mother.
Yeah, they are. They do tend to be good. Yeah.
They're amazing. My mother and my sister. Because it will be equal amount sympathy and get your head out of your own.
Yes. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Because of course, when you're in the middle of it, everything feels terrible.
Yes.
But yeah, so it's like really talk through it. And then actually, they're also both brilliant women in that they're positive. And so they will point out the good bits, which I definitely gloss over because I'm focused on the negative bits because I'm tired or probably hungry. And then chocolate, wine.
it's probably, you probably can't say enough how important a good support system is, can you? No, yeah. And you can't be selfish about it. It has to be two ways. But I think we're both lucky in that we do have a really, really strong support network of amazing people, amazing women, friends and family. And it is invaluable.
It is. It's ridiculous. And it's exactly what I'm tapping into at the moment anyway, because it's been like, hey, I have this idea. I love talking to you. I love hearing your stories. And I really want everyone else to get to hear them, because we're not the kind of people that are going to end up being on television, being interviewed, which is absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But equally, I'm just so in awe of everyone that I've met in motorsport and work with. And you do all support me. You do all hear me and understand me and are there for me if things are not good, but equally are there for me when things are great. And I love our network.
It's a really inspiring group of people to be around, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's exactly that. It's like, I'm pulling my socks up. I'm not complaining anymore. These guys are like the best of the best. And they're my friends and they're doing all these things. I want to be up there with them.
I love that you're doing this podcast because you told me you wanted to do it and now you're doing it. I love it.
I know. And I'm actually having to fight quite hard to fit it in because I'm the kind of person that will also, until I've worked everything out and I have the correct Girl Scout, I have to be prepared. So I have to know who I'm going to speak to. I have to know what project's going to look like. I have to know that I can cover so many weeks of content because I can't help myself. And that's what I've been trained to do. And
no, but that goes back to what we were saying earlier about this industry. You strive for success. You strive for excellence because I can see already, you don't want to put one out and then not have a plan for the rest. You want it to be a good project.
Yeah, and I want people to enjoy it and I want to be proud of it, of course. So yeah, it's totally ego-driven anyway. So. Actually, that's the next thing I wanted to move on to was success, but in a way not a negative way, very much a positive way, and which is, do you have a proudest moment of what you've done so far? And how did you celebrate it?
There's a few different things because obviously I do a few different things. There's different highlights for different. I'm always proud when I see something I've worked on for PR work, if it appears in print or on the TV or wherever. I actually still get the same buzz as I did 20 years ago, which is quite cool, I think. It's funny, you know, there was some sort of rumours a few months ago that Autosport was closing down, the print magazine. And I actually put up an Instagram post and then it sort of didn't date well because Autosport is still very much running. Because I still remember being on the shoot for the first cover story I ever did with them, which was with Jensen Button at BAR. And I still remember where we were when we did the photo shoot, which was on the roof of the Circuit de Catalunya at pre-season testing. And, and then seeing that front cover of like the motorsport Bible. It was amazing. So anytime I see anything in print, like today, one of my clients is in Hello magazine, you know, I rush to the news agents to get it. And it's just, you go like, oh my God, double page spread. Amazing. So PR like that. Events, there's been a couple. We did a huge party in Brazil after the Grand Prix for 3,000 people, which was a stupid endeavor. And we had all sorts of problems. Somebody, nothing to do with me, forgot to order the glassware for a party for 3,000 people. We only knew on the day that we didn't have glasses. So, you know, events, there's always stuff, something crops up. So we had to solve that. And then opening the door at like 11 p.m. and everything actually being as it needed to be there. And it being the most ridiculous, huge party in the middle of Sao Paulo. And 5 minutes before the door opened, I'm wearing stilettos, pushing sofas into position. That was quite cool because it was the biggest, I mean, it was huge. It was a huge Formula One official brand party. And then another one was with Top Gear Live when we wanted, and this is Emma and I, we wanted to try and get Lewis Hamilton racing Ken Block. And both of them were a little bit, for different reasons, not able to commit. And we had Lewis, we had his Formula One car, we had Ken and we had Ken's rallycross car, and they were all going to be in Barbados at the same event. And it was just sheer bloody mindedness. We just didn't stop trying to make this happen, and it took weeks, and eventually we got it together and it was going to happen. And then it happened on the event, and then we made a video for Top Gear about this race, and it was the biggest watched video on Top Gear platforms, digital platforms, up until that point. So yeah, I think when you just work so hard at something and then you get a good result, those are moments that you can be proud of.
Hell yeah, you high five that one, definitely. and then you do, you watch the numbers and you're like, I was right,
yes, all of the millions.
And you possibly put the video on repeat as well on your computer because every little bit helps.
And I'm still talking about it years later, obviously.
Yeah, but it was good. And then just to be fair, to cover the other end of the spectrum, have you experienced what you see as a lowest point and how did you overcome it?
Yeah. Again, it's kind of related to running your own business. You know, that has its massive highs and it has lows. And the whole thing is on you. There's nobody getting you business. There's nobody, that's just the way it is. And we were working a huge amount with Top Gear Live at the point that the BBC didn't renew Jeremy Clarkson's contract. And so what happened was all of the Top Gear Live events, which were due to take place over a sort of 6 to 9 month period, got postponed. And our year had been kind of based around that. And just literally overnight, we kind of probably lost 80% of our business. And that's really quite scary. And I remember I didn't deal with it very well. In hindsight, I sat and I binge watched Scandal for a week. I just binge watched Scandal. Like, I just couldn't get enough of Kerry Washington. Like, I don't know if I was just like absorbing Olivia Pope's strength, and maybe it was what I needed at that moment. But I binge watched Scandal and then just hustled, just contacted like every business lead I could imagine, and Emma was doing the same, and we just hit the phones. And actually, what happened was we then got work relatively quickly, and when we were fine. And then I think it kind of just goes back to what you were saying earlier. It's just we're very lucky, and it's not lost on me that we were trusted by contacts who then had work throw our way. And a lot of them were like, oh yeah, we've actually got something, but we kind of thought you were busy and you didn't need anything. Didn't really think that you had capacity. So it was quite an important lesson. We're all quite good at networking, but you do need to network in this industry, because people just see that you're kind of doing your thing and you're busy, and they don't kind of think that, you know, they think you're all right. And then it's just about, if you're not all right, and this isn't just a work, this is probably just not a work lesson, it's a life lesson. If you're not all right, phone someone. And that's what we did. Yeah. You know, we needed some business, so we just phoned around, and we were fortunate to be able to replace that business. But it was a pretty horrifying couple of weeks worrying about what was going to happen.
And it's that thing as well. It is on you. No one's coming to the rescue unless you're asking for the help.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I would have needed Olivia Pope too.
Yeah. I mean, she's a legend.
How do you keep learning?
I've always kind of tried to keep learning by challenging myself with either clients or moving into industries that I don't necessarily have experience in, but I'm pretty sure I can do it with, if I just kind of throw myself in the deep end. That's always the way I've operated. Just throw me in the deep end and I'll be fine. I've always kind of been like that. And then you can always keep learning if you want to.
You're right. So I work in house at the moment in the team. I cut my teeth through agencies, all sorts of agencies, and I worked in every single aspect of motorsport, which I think is what made me better at my job by the time I got to a team, because I can literally relate to every single aspect of anything to do within motorsport. And the way I keep things going is I identify things that I don't know how to do yet and that would make sense within my job, and then I go and learn them and include them.
Yeah. I think it's really important. I think just challenge yourself. It keeps your brain ticking.
Yeah.
I hate being bored. I really, really don't do bored very well.
Yeah. And also, and it's the keep learning thing. I absolutely love it. It doesn't matter what industry or what job you work in. That would be what would be driving us.
Definitely.
Another aspect of the industry that we work in is that it's incredibly fast paced, and that has its advantages because it's trained us to be incredibly responsive, mm-hmm. but it also has some disadvantages, which is it can be quite stressful. How do you cope with stress? How do you get yourself, you know, on a daily basis, how do you manage it?
So I started about maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I started doing yoga, and I'm really, really bad at exercise, by the way. I've never been a fit person. And I started doing yoga because it had been recommended to me. And it's incredible because it's good for the mind, probably even more than the body, because you can obviously do lots of different kinds of yoga. I do all of them, and it's so, so good for the mind. Cooking also, I think when you're focusing on following a recipe, because again, I'm not someone that's naturally great in the kitchen. I can't just throw a load of things together and it's some cordon bleu masterpiece. If you're following a recipe, the same as if you're following a yoga routine and you've got to be focusing or you're going to miss a move, you have to take your mind off of whatever's going on in your day to day. And I think that's quite important for stress management, having those things to escape. And the other thing, I do a lot of writing. And that's also been really, really good for me, like creative writing. And that's always been really good for me. Again, it's just a distraction technique from day to day that then allows your mind to clear, I think.
Yeah, actually, I'm exactly the same. I'm not a naturally fit person, but I've got a really bad lower back. Oh, you know, shock horror, possibly because I spent all my time in front of a laptop or a phone.
Yeah.
It's no great mystery. And I'm loving yoga. And also, yeah, I can do it anywhere. I can take it with me. And, you know, the hotel room doesn't need to be that big and you can get some stuff done. It's brilliant.
I felt the mental benefits of that within a month, 3 weeks, a month.
And it's that thing of taking time for yourself and going into an environment. If you're going to a class, that's actually quite naturally quiet and your phone's away. No one can get to you. There's no noise.
And when you're doing something like that, the phone has to be somewhere else. So you just get that respite for an hour or whatever.
Yeah, it's really good. I love photography because both my hands
are your photos busy. Are incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Thank you. I'm only just getting warmed up. I'm considering myself at the puppy level at the moment, but I love it. I absolutely love it. And it's that thing. I cannot have my phone and it just doesn't allow me to think about work, and it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. As much as I love work, I really I can't switch off for very long, because then I'll get ideas. Also, that's the circle, and it's as soon as I'm away and I've got some headroom, then I'll come up with ideas, and I cannot wait to get back and actually make it all happen.
My end of year holiday that I do every year, it's normally 11 days. If I'm lucky, I'll get 2 weeks, and that's my proper switch off one time a year. By a week in, or if it's been a particularly mad year, 10 days, then I start having ideas and scribbling things down and thinking, okay, right, I'm ready to get back now.
Absolutely, yeah. And I just wanted to know, how do you approach social media? And, you know, what's your view on it? How do you use it?
I tend to only follow people that I want to follow. And I follow a lot of authors. I don't tend to follow lots and lots of motorsport things on my personal channels. On, you know, client channels, obviously, you kind of follow them, but I kind of curate who I follow based on kind of just things I like, whether that's theatre or books or whatever it is, and friends. And Twitter is more of a sort of news platform for me, I think. Instagram I love, and I actually think it's probably a bit more of a positive space than some people are experiencing on other platforms anyway. I'm like you, I'm nowhere near as talented as you, but I've always loved taking pictures. I've got thousands of printed photos from years ago. So I love Instagram. I think it's a positive space. Again, I follow accounts that I find positive, and most of them are just friends. I don't tend to follow lots of celebrity accounts or anything. Obviously J-Lo, obviously Beyonce, not really any other celebrities. So it's just a nice friendly space, like quite supportive. But you know, in our jobs, you know when you sort of read articles about stress relief and how to turn off, and they're like, you know, delete all of your social media apps for a week, and you go, well, we can't, because we do social media for people. So we cannot escape social media even for one day.
In your personal feed, you curate, actually, I love that word so much when it comes to social media. You curate your own space and the people that you're happy to invite in.
Yeah.
And also the people that you're not happy to invite in. When it comes to my personal account, I will either block or I will put some very stringent filter in place, because I don't need that shit in my personal life.
No, exactly. I am very much, so my primary school headmaster, who is an amazing man and was an amazing head teacher. You know, when I was sort of 5 years old, the first thing he taught us was, you know, treat people how you yourself would like to be treated. And I've kind of really carried that through my life. And I would never write anything abusive or negative on anybody's social media, because Jesus, who's got the time for it? Like, aren't we all busy? I don't get it. I don't get that people have that much time that they want to go around and spread negativity or hatred or be cruel, because it just does seems like such a waste of time.
You've just touched actually on a piece of advice that you remembered till now. So that must have been pretty damn good advice or something that you took to heart. What advice would you give to people who actually are, you know, the people that do get in touch with us and say, we'd like to work in motorsport?
I think it's really important. I'm sure you're the same. You get some people that say, I want to work in motorsport. Don't care what I do. Want to work in motorsport. But it isn't maybe what they perceive it is. Like you said, it's not glamorous. 99.9% of the time, it is not glamorous. Find what you actually want to do as a profession before focusing on the industry. So I love PR. I love events. You know, the stuff I do, I love doing that as a particular job. I don't think that the sacrifices you have to make and the hard work you have to put in would be worth it if you didn't actually care what job you were doing.
I think that's brilliant advice, actually. It's almost like know who you are before you know where you want to be.
Yeah. And then that's also why I think if you're particularly looking at PR, go to an agency, because you might find that you absolutely hate it and it's not for you. You might think what that job is something that it isn't. Or likewise, if you're, you know, if you get a lucky internship at an agency and you're not really sure, but then you absolutely love it, then you know you're on the right path.
Totally. And then the other thing that I always try and remind people, and that's why I want to talk about motorsport, not specifically about Formula One. Formula One's the headliner.
Yes.
And it's amazing. It really is. But it's not the entire motorsport industry. And getting experience in different levels, different aspects of motorsport, and learning the things that make up those, you know, club racing, touring car, motorbikes. There's such a huge industry, which actually on certain levels might actually be easier to get into.
Definitely. And I tell people that as well. I say, you know, there's lots, and I say this from a point that I didn't do that. Like I said, I didn't know anything about motorsport and I landed a job in the World Rally Championship. And then I landed a job in Formula One. It was only after I went freelance that I started working in like F3 and GP2. And I was like, well, this is brilliant. I didn't even know any of this existed. And I had such a good time learning about all the other things that you can do. And, you know, there's still things I'd really like to do that are nothing to do with Formula One. I'd like to work on the Indy 500 one year, because that is, you know, a jewel in the crown event that I have never, ever worked on. So, you know, Formula One is not everything. It is, like you said, it's amazing. You know, I love all of the projects that I do and have done in it, but there is so much more out there.
My last question to you, I can't believe it. What are you looking forward to?
I am most looking forward to the end of lockdown, which I know is going to be a very common response for everything that you record during this time. But I have purchased what I refer to as the outfit of hope. And I will be putting it on the day that we're allowed out. And I will be going to Soho. And I'm not going to come home until the sun comes up.
I actually think we're all going to end up in the same place. We want to pick one place. We want to go out. And we want to not come home.
I'll set up a WhatsApp group. Yeah,
excellent. And we'll get the whole world to just come and hang out with us as well. It'll be amazing. Rebecca, thank you so much.
Thank you
for giving me so much time.
Thank you.
Another week, another story. And I loved hearing from Bex, because her experience is completely mixed across motorsport and really shows you what kind of career you could have, not just in Formula One, but how many amazing opportunities are available throughout the entire industry. I also just love hearing from her, full stop, because she's a brilliant lady to speak to, has masses and masses of experience, and it's just fun and nice person to chat to. As ever, check her out online. She's on Instagram, she's on Twitter, just like everybody else. And she's there under Rebecca Banks. I'd also like to thank everyone for listening and for all your reviews so far and your messages, the comments that you've made, both to Tabitha and Rachel, who were very kind to be my first two guests. It's been genuinely a joy to hear such a positive response to the podcast. So thank you so much.
And as always, if you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe via your favorite podcast platform and leave us a review. I think you can do that on the Apple Podcast one. I'm not sure about the others, but those definitely make a difference. They mean so much. And as I said, I'm reading them all. You can also get in touch directly with me if you'd like. That's via my Instagram account, which is Pandeia, P-A-N-D-E-A. Thanks so much for listening, and speak to you next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.